back in your feed on this, the most wonderful of days. It is, in fact, Wrestling Pod Day. That's wrestling spelled W-R-S-T-L-I-N-G, all of the graps without the E. We're getting straight to it. No long, drawn-out intros. No, stop doing the long, drawn-out intro. Okay, here we go. My name's Liam. This guy is Gareth.
Hello.
You found yourself on the Inside the Ropes podcast network. Thank you so much for giving us your time. Wonderful show today. We are tackling Stardom's Sendai Cinderella show and also have a glorious feature-length interview with Hisame, the pro wrestling Noah expert, ahead of next week's episode where we'll be discussing the big Noah show at the weekend. So without further ado, let's jump straight on into it, talking all things Stardom. Gareth, what did you think of this show?
Very good. As you'd expect from a big Stardom show, some really strong matchups throughout, well-paced cards, and very exciting to see a big title change.
Indeed. Well, let's go there first, shall we? Start at the top and work our way back. So the main event, Mai Iwatani versus Utami Hayashishita. This was an absolute barn burner from start to finish. And going back into the history of the thing, Utami had won the 5-star Grand Prix earlier in the year, but Mai Iwatani, I think, had held that belt for, gosh, I think it was upwards of 370 days that she'd
held. Yeah, it's been over a year.
Goodness gracious me. So a hell of a run there. But yeah, this was an absolute firecracker from start to finish. So much to get into here. What did you enjoy about this one in particular?
It was very hard-hitting. I enjoyed the kind of almost symmetry of them hitting both hitting huge moves out on the apron at various points in the match. Mm. It was that move on the apron for Utami that basically completely turned the tide of the match for her.
Yeah,
for it was basically all downhill for poor old Mayu after that.
Indeed, yeah. I think prior to that, and certainly in the opening exchanges, Mayu had a slight air of indignation about Utami getting the better of her. I thought, anyway, that was something I picked up on. And yeah, you're right, it did seem to seep into more desperation mode following that. What was it, an Emerald Fusion?
Air Raid Crash,
absolutely, yeah.
So yeah, she hit that on the apron. It felt like it was almost inevitable. I don't think Mayu ever really got, from my perspective, ever really got any sustained offense after that.
Mm.
Little spurts here or there, but Utami was just kind of being a bit like a Terminator and just kept coming and kept coming at her and kept coming at her.
Oh, man. Yeah, for sure.
Until the inevitable.
She was relentless in this one. And one thing I really loved about this match is it was just packed with urgency from both ends. Utami, as you say, had that Terminator-like mentality and was just going for it hell for leather. But the different side of urgency that you saw from Mayu was a real sense of desperation, slight panic of the title slipping through her fingers, and it quite rightly so as it was. But I just thought it made for a really epic match. And in fact, that even bled through to the referee at one point as well. I forget which move caused it, but he backed Utami off so forcefully because he wanted to check on Mayu. And just little things like that just add to the drama. I thought it was really, really well done.
Yeah, there's a big strike at one point which appears to knock Mayu out. But Utami pushes the ref off when he's trying to check on her.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was a really nice little touch. And then again, something that from Utami that I noticed throughout the match, that if she's already had success with a move, she goes back to that same well. So she then followed that appearing to knock Mayu out with another air raid crash like she did on the apron. I thought she maybe had her beat at that point.
Yeah, same.
But other things throughout the match that she returned to were a sleeper hold. She had some real success with a sleeper.
Yep. Guillotine choke.
Yeah, exactly. The guillotine choke. And then the a torture rack bomb as well.
Yes.
That she went to that well twice as well. So I think if she hit something and it really looked to, it felt like each successive attempt at something that already been successful was just another further nail in Mayu's coffin.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
In this match.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I think it was, from a psychology point of view, it was very much like, oh, okay, well, this worked and this worked well. So, I mean, why wouldn't I try it again?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it made perfect sense. One of the things that I also really enjoyed about this was there were some absolutely brilliant suplexes, not only exquisitely executed, like the bridging side of things was great, but just some real variety in there as well. I'm an absolute sucker for a wheelbarrow suplex, but I don't know that I've ever seen one with a bridge, and that was fantastic. I think that was from Itami. And on the other side, Mayu hit just a glorious bridging dragon suplex. And more often than not, in modern wrestling, I find you see the dragon suplex as a release, perhaps because it looks like it would be a difficult one to safely pull off with a bridge. But this one, sure enough, she kept that full Nelson locked on. And yeah, really picture perfect stuff, you know, from a technical standpoint. It's really nice to see.
I liked when that dragon suplex wasn't successful. She then went for another pinning combination by virtue of hitting a moonsault and covering. I like to see that sort of when, you know, one big move isn't successful, immediately hitting something else big and covering as well.
Yeah, that's
I think is a nice way of doing things. You don't always see.
Exactly, and that's the urgency, wasn't it? You know, that
yes.
That was really baked into this match, and you felt it throughout. And I also really enjoyed, we mentioned the guillotine earlier, at one point, Itami hit like what I'd describe as a snap guillotine. It almost looked like it was a bit of a DDT, and then it was in tight. But something really curious from a production point of view that I don't think I've ever seen before was the referee was actually moving Mayu's hair out of her face so the camera could get a shot of her facial expression.
I didn't catch that. That's interesting.
I don't think I've ever seen that before in wrestling.
No, weird. That's an interesting one.
Yeah,
really. I realised another thing, going back to something I said earlier about the pair of power bombs out of the torture rack position. She actually went for that 3 times in the match.
Okay. Yeah.
The first attempt was countered into a crucifix bomb.
Oh, that was a great crucifix bomb.
That looked
well.
Amazing. Yeah. So I do think with that in mind, it was curious then that she went to that well again after it had been counted once.
I suppose the kayfabe argument is that she has faith in that particular bit of offense and, you know, obviously puts a certain number of chips on it. So
absolutely. I was surprised that Itami won the title here because I'd watched the previous day's show where she was defending the tag team titles, which she retained. Mm. So it's curious now she's a sort of double champion here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. She does seem to be somebody that the company has had their eye on for a while, just reading through some of the comments. A lot of long-term Stardom fans seem to have felt that this one was coming. And, you know, now she's got her day in the sun and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
From a drama perspective, I absolutely adored Mayu's facial expressions in the immediate aftermath. So as she was almost coming to and just recognizing that she's lost, and there was a sort of sense of disbelief that again sort of fell into slight indignation. You know, she was shoving away Starlight Kid and the other teammates and, you know, didn't want any of that. It was, yeah, just really nice bit of theatre just to cap off the match.
She stormed out post-match.
Yeah, but it makes sense. You know, if you've had a belt for that long, you would be furious or gutted or, you know, I've got no problem with that at all. I think that's really nice storytelling.
That's definitely been one thing in the past, is champions losing the belt and being okay with it.
Yes, absolutely.
Which makes no sense to me. So yeah, it's good to see that is not the case in Stardom.
Yep.
But yeah, a lot of double champs or, you know, a lot of cases for holding more than one belt in Stardom. But there is a lot of titles in Stardom.
There is. Do you know, though, I'm not mad at it because it does give it a sense of unpredictability. You know, you don't just think, oh, she has a tag title or something that she can't win a singles one. You know, all bets are off.
Oh, definitely.
And so post-match, interesting little showdown. So Itami suggested that her win is ushering in the beginning of a new era in Stardom. And that remains to be seen, but could well be the case. Offered up the open challenge, essentially, for the next big show in December. We had Julia and Shuri from the Donna Del Mundo stable coming out to state their claim, but perhaps more interestingly, Momo Watanabe of Utami's same stable, the Queen's Quest, came out very stern, actually, after having a really great match earlier in the show against Himeka. And she's the one that is going to get the shot. Again, thought this was interesting. Really liked the way it was done. The only thing I would say is the older wired mics, a little bit of a trip hazard, aren't they? At one point, I thought they were going to... There were two wired mics in play and I felt like they were going to kind of both loop Itami and trip her over like a
amazing
some sort of cartoon. But yeah, good stuff to close the show.
Jazzed for the two intra-stable matchups for the next show.
Yes, absolutely. So sorry, I should have said, so in that same segment, Julia and Shuri decided that they were going to compete against each other. So yeah, two big matches already lined up for that show. So
underneath the main event, we had Julia defending the white belt against Konami. Julia, I absolutely love, love, love. Yeah, I think she's fantastic. Really enjoy seeing her. Every time I'm just, it just reconfirms what a star I think she is.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But for me, this match actually was a bit of a disappointment.
Mm, interesting.
I think it under-delivered.
Okay.
Konami coming off the big turn, maybe working slightly differently. You kind of had Julia maybe playing maybe a more overt face in this match. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, I suppose in football terms, you'd maybe say she was a false nine. Not like a full baby face, but de facto baby face in this one.
Sure.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, one thing I did quite like is the look that Konami's sporting now, I think, is quite effective. At the start of the match, where she was kind of posing and being quite creepy, I thought she almost had quite a Gollum-esque vibe. But yeah, it's different. I quite like this one, to be honest with you. I liked how aggressive Konami was. I think there was one point where there was this whole, it felt like ages, they were sat in this face wash sequence. She was just rubbing her heel on Julia's face and it looked absolutely brutal. But I think this is probably the match where I've seen Julia get the least amount of offense in. So it was a bit of a departure from what I'm used to with her.
Yeah.
But no, for me, this one probably did tick the boxes. And I liked the story of the match with the arm being worked on. However, the only qualm I did have with the match was the fact that with Julia's finisher, there's a lot of lifting involved, and she did practically all of it with the arm that had been worked on the whole match. That was a slight shame. If they would have found a way to get into the move without doing that, that would have been great. But yeah, no, it's fair enough. I can understand why you might have felt slightly underwhelmed by that one.
Not bad, but just I think I had higher hopes for this one, and yeah, it maybe didn't deliver. Capped off by Julia maybe shrugging off all the hard work Konami had done working over that arm.
Yeah, it was curious, wasn't it? Yeah, for sure. Further down the card, let's talk about Momo Watanabe, who, as we said, is going to be challenging for the big strap at the next show. She was against Donna Del Mundo faction member Himeka, one of my personal favourites on the Stardom roster. What did you make of this one, G?
Another goodie. It was definitely for a match with effectively no real stakes. I think it over-delivered.
Yeah, for sure. I felt like Momo looked like a killer in this match. You know, she was really focused, and I honestly didn't feel like Himeka actually got that much offense in. I felt like she was on the back foot for a lot of this. And, you know, if you're wanting to build somebody up to challenge for the belt at the next show, then that makes all the sense in the world. But yeah, I thought she seemed very focused, very driven, and almost quite clinical in what she was doing. Like, it did never look like it was out of her hands, put it that way.
No, I totally agree. You know, I do think Himeka is somebody down the road, I think, you know, should be challenging for the red belt.
Oh, please, absolutely. She's got the best facial expressions in pro wrestling.
Really enjoy her. You know, I think she's got a lot of upside. I'm just high on the whole DDM stable.
Me too. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whilst we're here then, let's just briefly talk about the opener as well, because that was Micah, another DDM member, against one of your favourites, well, both of our favourites, really, Saida, who falls firmly into the category of Jack Little Freak, am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was so pleased. I was so pleased to see her get so much offense in here. Yeah. Going in, I was kind of expecting Ida to get kind of rolled over here, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, it looks like they are positioning her as somewhat of a threat.
Yeah.
Here. She's not a joke.
I thought this one was particularly good because it was a different flavor of wrestling to what I saw elsewhere on the show. You know, sure, there's hard-hitting stuff throughout this card, but this one was, I would say, a more traditional strong-style matchup. There were a lot more of those strike exchanges, shoulder barge exchanges, those long rallies, if you like, between shots. I really enjoyed this, and it speaks to the sort of variety that Stardom actually have in their locker.
I do think that's one thing, you know, we've been seeing a lot lately with a lot of the shows that we talked about, is that they've been just kicking off with such great, relatively fast-paced, short-ish, strong matches that really set the tone for the whole show.
Yeah.
We saw this, I think, on the DDT shows and the Tokyo Joshi Pro shows we've been talking about, and even the previous Stardom show we talked about. You know, you think how good the Azumi and Starlight Kid match was.
Jeez. Yeah, for sure. And I think, to be honest with you, they're fast becoming one of my favourite promotions. You know, the shows that I've seen have all delivered in a big way. and there's so much up and down the card that's interesting and unique and exciting, and I genuinely can't wait for the next big show they do.
It was a shorter show and not as big, obviously, mm-hmm. but the show the night before Stardom Pot, and I actually think was a more consistently, for my money, was maybe a more consistently strong show.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Maybe didn't hit the same high watermark of the, you know, the main event here, but overall was like consistently really strong, whereas through the middle here, it sort of lags, you know, it lags a little bit for me. Whereas, and also, I don't know if you'd agree with this, I don't think it was as consistently good as Wrestle Princess. I don't know if it's comparing apples to oranges, but for my money, I think as a complete show, if I could, you know, only have one of these, I would take Wrestle Princess.
Yeah, interesting. I think I probably would go the other way, actually. I think I'd probably just take this one over. But it's, God, what a deal to try and make. We're talking about two absolutely top draw shows. And
well, and it's not a deal you have to make. It's not Desert Island Graps. You know, you don't have to.
Although we're available, Tom Campbell at Cultaholic.
But it's just interesting to have that conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think. Yeah, no, for sure. They're just such good promotions. You know, everything I've seen from them thus far has been really, really fresh, really, really unique. And can't wait to see more, quite honestly.
Obviously, during this show, Stardom have announced that their 10th anniversary show is going to run at Budokan Hall.
Big stuff. Big stuff indeed.
We've got that to look forward to. That's something we're absolutely going to cover.
Yep.
So, yeah, plenty more Stardom to come from us in the coming months.
And we are back. So, with the promised interview with the person behind the incredibly helpful Twitter account that unlocks all things pro wrestling, Noah, Hisame has joined us. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Most welcome.
So let's get straight into it. We want to talk about your fandom first, because clearly you're so involved with pro wrestling, Noah, and such a great library of knowledge for anybody trying to get involved.
Thank you.
Where did this all start for you?
It actually started when, must have been the early 2000s, when my boyfriend thought that I'd probably be interested in Japanese wrestling. And he brought home back then it was tape trading, everybody traded VCR. There was nothing, as you know, like streaming service on demand. People hadn't even heard of that technology, couldn't handle it. So the only way you could actually watch anything was by tape trading. So he traded a load of Japanese wrestling VHS and DVD for me, and I got into Noah that way.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So you've been watching essentially, what, from the start?
Probably round about 2002, 2003.
Great.
Okay. Roughly from the start. So roughly from there.
Okay. And has it always been Noah that you've watched, or have you ever sort of dabbled with other promotions?
I was into FMW for a while.
Okay.
I really enjoyed that. I have to admit, I do like deathmatch wrestling. And I watched a lot of Big Japan. But when it came to the big three, New Japan, All Japan, Noah was the one that I just took the most to, had the most interest in, just liked the most.
That seems to sort of make a lot of sense, sort of with what we understand of sort of Japanese wrestling during that period.
Yeah.
Noah seemed to really stand head and shoulders above everything else at that point in time.
Yes, yeah, because I mean, New Japan, I watched, but I never really got into it. It didn't like appeal to me the way Noah did. All Japan, I've always enjoyed, especially the Misawa Four Pillars era. But it was always Noah that, you know, was my go-to, the one that I was most interested in, the one that I cared about the most. I can't really put into words what it is, you know, why it appealed to me just so much. But that was just something about Noah that I loved. You know, I think it was just, you know, how it was just so different from the others. It was just, it didn't have to rely on, you know, big entrances with, you know, pyros, et cetera, et cetera. It was more about, I guess, it was just, you know, the fight it put on, the purity of its fight, you know, the way they went about it, you know, just everything about it, really. It was just something just so different about it. Not to knock New Japan or anything, but it's like Marufuji used to say when he was watching All Japan and New Japan in the late 90s, early 2000s, the 80s even. I used to say there was a huge production difference. You know, New Japan was more flashier, whereas All Japan was a lot more, it was a lot more pure, it was a lot more aesthetic.
Interesting.
How it kind of came across to him as well, and I can totally agree with that. Mm.
Yeah, something I've always really loved about Noah, and I think what really captured my eye when we were watching sort of back in the early noughties, was just the green ring, which sounds so simple, yeah. But it was so unique. You know, where else do you see that? And there's something about that. It's almost a bit of a shame, I think, that they've got rid of it, but I can completely understand why.
It is, and it gave Noah in that era, the golden era, when you look back on it, it's kind of like a feeling of summertime as well.
Hmm.
Because you remembered the ring and you remember just, you know, the haze of it, and it was just like this perpetual sunshine.
Oh, that's a really interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, absolutely.
It's definitely something that's always really stuck with me. I think, you know, Liam and I will reminisce about the sort of the green ring, funnily. Like, yeah. It's weird what has really stuck with us.
Yeah. Yeah, the green.
Did you go to the Wrestling Channel Super Shows in Coventry by any chance?
Yes.
Did you? Oh, yeah. Wow.
I had a inkling that you may have done, so we went to those as well.
Yeah.
Struggling to remember exactly the matches.
The one that stands out in my mind was the junior match. You had Brian Danielson, and I think he was teaming with Eddie Edwards, and they were against Kenta and Taiji Ishimori.
Ah.
And I seem to remember that Edwards kind of, as everyone put it, you know, his jaw was lodged in the roof in the rafters after the kick Kenta gave him. But it was quite funny because he did actually say to Kenta years later, "I miss you kicking me."
he's a madman.
That's a match that I always remember. I remember
there was a British wrestler at the time called James Tai, and he was involved in like a six-man, I think it was, and got, you know, his fair share of shots fired. And I seem to recall one of the, I think it must have been Power Slam at the time, the UK magazine, suggesting that maybe it might have been an audition, which I thought was quite wry, but he looked pretty sore afterwards, to be honest.
But yeah, I just remember the very fact that we had these sort of huge Japanese stars coming over, and then like seeing them wandering around like pre-show doing meets and greets and stuff, they kind of felt almost otherworldly. Mm. Like,
yes. Yeah,
I had no problem like approaching some of like the American names that were over that I'd seen on TV, but the prospect of kind of approaching any of the Japanese guys, it just felt kind of out of bounds.
Yes, very, very much so. We didn't go to the meet and greets for a couple of reasons. I don't think at the time, you know, we could have afforded it, and also because I'm not good with that kind of thing.
Mm.
So I just couldn't have done it. But for me to see them, it was enough.
Sure. It's always so awkward, isn't it? I never know what to say to people at kind of meet and greets.
No.
No. No. God, no. No.
I really loved your match.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. So have you ever been over to Japan to see Noah? Or was that your sort of only life experience? Oh, you have? Oh, wow.
Yep. This time last year, I went to see them at Sumo Hall.
Amazing.
And I also went to see a smaller show in Osaka.
Wow.
The smaller show in Osaka, there was a completely different atmosphere. Everyone was more relaxed because, you know, had to be so tense about, you know, attendances and being in the right place, etc., etc. It's a completely different atmosphere.
Mm.
So, yeah, I saw them at Sumo Hall. Admittedly, I don't remember much about Sumo Hall because I just got off the plane. I'd had about 2 hours sleep after standing in a long, long, long queue to get my tickets sorted out, my sweeper card, and to travel to Osaka. Don't know why I didn't wait to do it, but I didn't. So I'd had about 2 hours sleep, and I was wearing an old battered Noah t-shirt, and I felt so embarrassed. Oh, gosh, I was more frumpy than ever. I don't really remember much of it, but I was there, and that's what counts.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, fair enough. Okay, so what we try and do on this podcast is sort of walk the line between introducing people to new promotions they might not have seen outside of the sort of big two, if you like, of WWE and AEW, and then also trying to give a bit more detail for people that are fans of that. So in the case of new fans, what would you suggest is the best route in for a new fan wanting to get into Pro Wrestling Noah?
I would suggest that you do subscribe to, obviously, Wrestle Universe. Now, you get the first month free, so you're not actually wasting any money, spending money on anything you don't want. And I would suggest that you start off by watching the two very first shows of Noah, which are on there. It's a completely different roster. It's strange because while the roster has changed, the kind of the feel of Noah hasn't. And that will give you a background of its history. After that, I do suggest that you kind of perhaps watch, you know, more of the heavyweight leagues, the M1 Victory, the tag leagues. That will give you a feel for it. Also as well, watch, you know, Kazuhiko Nakajima's produce shows. And then I would branch out from there. The beauty of Wrestle Universe is that you can look up all your favourites and see what they've done in other places. And it's going to introduce you to new things as well. So that would be, you know, my recommendation starting to Noah. Watch the two new shows first, because then you can see how much has changed and also how little has changed. So it's a paradox, but it's one that kind of works.
Good stuff. Okay.
What is it you think is the thread that runs through Noah throughout the years for you?
For me, it's been Misawa's presence. The fact that, you know, obviously he's passed away now, but his presence is still there. His presence can still be felt. Even though the company has changed, you know, from what it was, it's had to move on without him, obviously. But it's strange because while things have changed in Noah, he's never actually been left behind. Because Noah is still, you know, the trainees are still trained on how he taught them, on his ideals as he was taught himself by Baba. So that hasn't really changed, and that won't change in Noah. That's something that no owner can change. You know, it's something that no owner can touch. They can change the colour of the ring, but they can't change what goes on in the dojo. So his presence is always there. It's always felt.
So going into the big show on November 22nd, could you perhaps give us an idea of what are the big stories going into that? What should people be looking out for?
I would look out for both all the title matches. They will have a story behind them. There's a completely different feel to each of them. So that would be something that I would look out for. I would also look out for any matches where people kind of don't really have any reason to be in them. And it's just a way just to put on the card, because that's kind of a way that you always know that that person is going to do something later, whether they're going to challenge for something, they're going to screw over their friends. Have a look out for any match that you feel someone is a bit out of place in.
Interesting.
It's a, you know, always thing to look out for in big cards. Someone is on the card for a reason, not because of that match, but they're there to do something.
It's interesting. So it's almost like they're the human equivalent of a Chekhov's gun.
Yes. Like if I look at the card just very quickly, let's have a look. See if I can see anything immediately jumps out. It's going to be a hard one to call because everyone, there's kind of a story behind each match. So it's going to be perhaps the way, you know, somebody acts in it, you know, is, I mean, take for example, you know, Mohamed Yoni, for example, he's not doing anything at the moment, but yet he's in a match which is predominantly junior. So it might mean nothing, but that's, you know, how it looks. He's been stuck in the first card. He's not doing anything. Will he do something? Will he not do anything? Will he join the M's Alliance like everyone seems to think? It's funny.
Your spidey senses are tingling there.
Yeah, it's always something to look out for. Yoni, okay, he doesn't really have to do much now. He has paid his dues. It's an easy payday for him. But it's just one of those things to look out for.
The main event, Go Shizaki vs Katsuki Nakajima. Could you perhaps give fans that haven't had a chance to see a bit of a background as to what's gone into this one?
To cut a long story short, Nakajima and Shizaki, their careers kind of run parallel because they actually debuted in the same year, just a few months after each other. They've never really been rivals on the scale that they have before now, apart from a time when Nakajima was teaming with Masaki Tamir as the Aggression. I can't really think of a time when really they had such a vicious feud. So what happened was, to give you a story of why this feud came about, was that the Aggression fell apart at N1 Victory, Global Heavyweight League, call it what you will. They fell apart a few years ago, and by this time Shizaki had done all he could do teaming with Kaito Kimura and Gokai, and they kind of went their separate ways, and they formed, Nakajima and Shizaki formed Axis. Axis were basically said they were the centre of Noah, they were the mid-generation, they didn't really belong to the Golden Era, they didn't really belong to the New Era, they were just in the middle. So they went on to win the tag titles about two or three times. They lost them, but the big break between them came not when Shiozaki actually lost the titles for them. It's actually came between them when he became the GHC heavyweight champion. Because, of course, he started saying, you know, I am Noah, and there was, you know, Nakajima in the background, and he was kind of like his chorus in a way.
Mm.
So Nakajima, as I think everybody could probably tell if you go back and watch it, kind of started to resent this. And things came to a head when the title match went to referee stop, when Sugiura choked out Shiozaki for the GHC Heavyweight Tag Titles. Kino came storming into the ring, yelling about Shiozaki as if, you know, I am Noah, etc., etc. Nakajima turned on Shiozaki, and he joined Kongo. But the thing about that is that Nakajima doesn't actually seem to be one part of Kongo. He never actually sticks around if, you know, anyone's being spooled out in the ring and needs everyone else. You know, he always stands apart from them. If we look at the entry, he's sitting on the turnbuckle, he's watching them. So whatever he's up to, it's sinister.
He's a sinister looking man, isn't he?
He is. He is. He can look, he used to be a nice chubby freckled boy, but look at him now, he's evil. And Shiozaki's part, there's, I think, a lot of still hurt. And I think it's still a wound that Nakajima is going to just, you know, gouge during the match. Shiozaki is not actually in good condition. He's had to have an MRI on his shoulder.
God.
He's taped up everywhere. His shoulders are taped, his knees are taped. You know, obviously he takes repeated kicks from Nakajima, who also winds his arm around the steel barrier. So it's going to be interesting, the match, to see just exactly what the outcome is. You know, whether or not, you know, Shiozaki does overcome Nakajima, or, as a lot of people think, Nakajima will become the GHC Heavyweight Champion, which then will lead on to this whole storyline, probably, with alienating, splitting up Kongo.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, right. Well, that's worth the price right there. That sounds fantastic. I want to talk about Shiozaki for a second, because he's somebody that I saw, I think, relatively early on in his career. He was over here a couple of times. I think he even came over with RH for a show, actually.
He did, yes. Yeah.
Where do you think he stands at this point in the sort of pantheon of Noah champions?
He's Noah born, so it, and also he's both Tabashi's pupil and Misawa's last tag partner. So that, of course, kind of gives him a special glow, special aura. I think that he's had the run that he always should have had. His first run, obviously, because it came off Misawa's death, that was not auspicious. His other runs just didn't work out for other reasons. Obviously, you know, you have the whole thing with the Suzuki Army. And I don't think that Shiozaki was then into his own either. And I think there was also a lot of problems with the fact that he returned to Noah after walking out to All Japan. And a lot of the fans felt, well, you know, why on earth did you come back? Mm. We don't want you back. Well, you know, now you're trusting him, you're giving him the title. I think there was a lot of problems at the time. There was a lot of problems, you know, not perhaps so much with him. Shiozaki, like Nakajima, I think it took him quite a while just to find out what he wanted to be, what he wanted to do, what he wanted to represent. But I think he's found his niche now, is I Am Noah, which, you know, I think does work. It does work for him.
Yeah.
It seems a really good hook for him.
Yeah.
I think for me, having sort of not watched Go in quite a long time and then tuning back in and just immediately he looked a lot flashier and with the gear and the hair and that character hook, it was very easy to latch onto him and be like, I really dig this version of him.
Yeah, because before I don't think he actually really knew kind of what he wanted to do. I think he was more just kind of a Kobashi clone. And that's really all that he knew to do. But now he's developed, he's, you know, relaxed a bit, much better place than it was when he left it for All Japan and when he returned from All Japan. So I think he has had now to explore how he wants to be as champion, which is how it should always have been for him. But, you know, the sad thing was that when he was first given the championship, he said, well, I don't know what to do. You know, no one has told me what I have to do. Because I think everyone was so shell-shocked after Misawa died.
Sure. Did you make of his match with Fujita earlier in the year? Because that's one that seemed to get everybody talking, not just Noah fans, but seemed to really sort of transcend Noah in a way.
It was an interesting match because Noah had to come up with something very different than what normally you would have had. It had to encompass a lot more than just two guys just striking blows and having, you know, what we call a hoss fight, heavyweight fight. And I think Noah, you know, they did well with it. I always remember we were all, you know, watching and thinking, well, when are they going to do something? Why are they just staring at each other? And they built it up from there. And it didn't seem like you were watching half an hour. It just went by so quickly.
No, it was incredible. I mean, so I come from a sort of performing arts drama background.
Yeah.
And I left to my own devices. I just read so much into this sort of 30-minute stare down. I thought it was epic. I mean, I don't know that I ever want to see it again. But as a one-off thing, this it was just almost mesmerising in a way. Yeah, it was incredible.
Like, Shiozaki said, it was either Shiozaki or Fujita, I think it was actually Shiozaki, but he said, you couldn't do this in front of a live audience, so the challenge that we have is, you know, what you can do without it. And of course, the fight went up and Fujita tried to throw Shiozaki off the balcony. But it was kind of things that you would have never, ever have seen. If the crowd had been there, you just wouldn't have seen it. So it gave Noah the chance to explore new things.
Yeah, I think that's why it was perfect. Yeah, absolutely.
It definitely felt a bit like kind of making lemonade, didn't it? You've been dealt a crappy old hand and you can't have fans.
Yeah.
So let's do something that we could never in a million years have done.
Yeah.
If it were business as usual, which I think... You know, it's almost a shame that we haven't seen more of that across the wrestling landscape.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could have done it for about perhaps 10, 15 minutes. Mm. You could never have done it for half an hour.
No.
Because people would just have, you know, got annoyed. And I think a live crowd would have killed it.
Yep, agreed.
But you could do it when there was no one around.
You mentioned earlier about sort of fans feeling not betrayed, but maybe a slight sense of mistrust with Shiozaki when he came back to Noah.
Yes. Yeah,
I wanted to ask you about Kenta and how did you interpret him going to New Japan post WWE as opposed to returning to Noah?
I knew that part of it was due with financial reasons. I don't think that Noah could ever have afforded the wage that he was used to, the wage that he would have been getting in WWE. And I also think that Kenta had probably grown used to having such a large audience that WWE has, even if he wasn't often on WWE shows. And that he was not going to get at Noah. Very sadly put, it would just have been like the prodigal son leaving the big city and coming home to a quiet fishing village.
Mm.
It would have been like that, because at the time, you know, Noah, they didn't have any kind of streaming service. They didn't have the fans, you know, that he was used to, you know, in the stadiums. I don't think there was anything malicious in it, because, you know, he did say that, you know, I didn't feel that I could return to Noah unless, of course, I had some results, which I didn't get. But to be honest, I was just relieved to see that he was looking happy again.
Yeah.
Mm. Because he hadn't been, and, you know, that's just all I wanted for him, to just be happy, whether it was Noah, whether it was anywhere else. I just wanted him just to get out of there and just go and do what made him happy.
Definitely.
Yeah, it was so heartbreaking to watch that whole run just... Through no fault of his own, at every possible turn, it just didn't go, you know.
No, Nigel thought he just looked ill, then he just looked like a ghost.
And I just think as well, like, when you've seen him previously and you know how influential and what a great wrestler he is, to then come in and have that run, like, and you've, like, maybe told your friends, like, oh, you got to watch this guy, he's great. And then, you know, I remember the same thing happening with Ultimo Dragon many moons ago, you know, and him coming in and just having such a lame duck run in WWE, and you know, both Liam and I remember both of us trying to tell our friends at that time, like, oh, you gotta watch this guy, he's amazing, and then, you know, slipping on the way out to the ring that time. And just,
oh,
you know,
God.
I think, you know, for some people it works. They can play a character. Kenta can't. He can only be Kenta, and that works in New Japan because they let him be him. You know, he didn't have to play some other character. He didn't have to give himself, you know, a stupid name or anything like that. You know, he could just be him. And I think that's why it worked in New Japan.
We touched earlier on Wrestle Universe. So obviously Cyber Agent, and more recently the Cyber Fight Collective, as it's been rebranded, picked up Pro Wrestling Noah earlier in the year. What was your initial reaction to that deal?
I was surprised, but I was also very relieved, because obviously Ledet had bought Noah, and I think they'd done everything that they could with them. They funneled money into them, but they did do a lot of good for them. But when it came to getting the streaming service, that was a difficulty. And they came across Wrestle Universe, and they obviously that was run by Sanshiro Takagi, and he said, you know, you might as well just sell me Noah. So they bought Noah. And there's actually quite a backstory to this as well, because DDT had actually got started because Mitsuharu Misawa had actually patronised them. He'd actually been one of the shareholders in the company. Well, shareholder was a stakeholder. Mm. He was a stakeholder, but I don't know if there's a difference. And he'd actually, you know, brought them onto one of the early Noah shows. And I don't know if he was ever in DDT himself, but certainly he had been a very great help to getting them started. Because he saw, you know, the wisdom in helping the company, you know, rather than just, you know, shutting it down and panicking. And so Takagi thought, well, you know, he helped me. This is my chance to help him. And it's actually worked really well. Mm. It's, you know, Noah, I think, have actually, you know, finally sailed into harbour.
Yeah, no, agreed. Is there, I mean, have you been familiar with DDT and Tokyo Yoshi Pro and all those promotions?
Admittedly, I have seen it, but I could never get into it. Mm. Yeah, I mean, the Bat and Hustle I tried, but I just couldn't get into them. I mean, it, you know, it does amuse me sometimes when I see some of the, you know, the translations of the shows and the silly storylines, but it's just something that I just can't get into.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think that's kind of the strength of the offering in a way, that it, you do have these sort of three or four different promotions that arguably cater to completely different people.
Yes.
So all
yeah.
under one roof, essentially.
Yeah, because you've got DDT, you've got Noah, you've got Tokyo Joshi, and you've got
Gambear.
Oh yeah, Gambear.
Yeah, yeah, so you've got those four, and they are looking to expand by adding some more. So there probably will be some more promotions added, you know, as soon as the coronavirus subsides.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think President Takagi was saying about possibly a deathmatch promotion.
Yeah.
Which would be interesting. Mm. Liam and I watched some deathmatch, a US deathmatch show. It's the first time we've watched a whole deathmatch show in I don't know how many years, and we both realised we don't really have the stomach for it anymore.
No, no.
Well, me and my boyfriend, what was it we watched the other day? I think we randomly came across CZW, and it was a case of pointing out how young some people looked and wondering if other guys were still around, or, and it was a case of, didn't he die? No, he's not dead. Maybe I'm thinking of someone else.
So brutal, isn't it? Oh, yeah. Alrighty. And so going forward, what do you sort of expect from Noah going into 2021?
I think there's going to be greater opportunities for them in 2021. I think with the Yokohama Budokan and with the other stadium that they're running in Yoyagi, I think they're going to possibly branch out to looking at running bigger places. Mm. They're never going to forget, obviously, the provinces. They're never going to stop running smaller shows there. That'll always be a case. They've prided themselves on, you know, going places that, you know, other promotions usually don't. But I think they are going to start looking perhaps to the bigger show, you know, the bigger venues. President Takagi, he did say that he was thinking of perhaps the Tokyo Dome, but that might be obviously a joint show with everybody who's under Cyberfight. But that was a possibility. So we may see some kind of, you know, mega show at the Tokyo Dome next year.
That sounds amazing. Yeah,
so it's a possibility.
I'd be up for that.
I think that'd just be so interesting. I really like the, even if you're not necessarily under the same banner, there seems to be much more an attitude of kind of mutual cooperation in Japanese wrestling, more so than elsewhere. Even currently you've got the Assemble Joshi shows happening, the kind of promotions co-promoting these big shows, which I think is really interesting. And so, yeah, I love seeing more of that. And it's just, it seems to be a good way to get more eyes on stuff. So you'd be like, oh, I've not seen this person before. That was really interesting. Yeah. I'll go and check that promotion out.
Yeah. And it's often a good way, you know, to discover new things. Perhaps when you look at promotions, you know, people perhaps used to be in, or, you know, you watch old footage of something else. It's a good way to get started, you know, to have more of a choice in your wrestling, so to speak.
That's
you
it.
Know, it just really depends what you like.
Yep, and that's what we're all about. No, absolutely. All right, Gareth, anything else from you?
Is there anything other than Noah that is getting you really excited in the world of wrestling at the moment?
I'm just really focused on Noah at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just you know, concentrating on them.
Oh, of course.
One thing I wanted to ask, actually, because obviously the work you do on the Twitter account, which probably may or may not feel like work, but it's, you know, this, what there definitely is obviously a lot of effort that's gone into that, you know. Has that ever been something that anyone from Noah has kind of reached out to you about, or is that just entirely off your own back?
No. When I went to the IPW shows, in Noah they brought Naomichi Marufuji over to fight Doug Williams.
Mm.
It was in Kent, and obviously Noah's official translator was there. And she was very complimentary about it. But apart from that, I've never actually heard from any of them. None of them have ever DM'd me or anything, except for one person, which was Genba Hiriragi, who used to be in Noah. He's retired now. He sporadically appears on Twitter with new accounts because he forgets his old one. But no, he was the only person who basically said in the very early days of my account, who actually DM'd me, and it made me laugh because I thought of all the people, it had to be Genba. So yeah, I never expected from them, anything at all. But I did get a lovely DM from someone just who said that they'd actually had a meeting with Noah about something. And they had actually mentioned me in that meeting, and they said that, they were very appreciative for what I'd done, because it had helped them a lot. And that just means that, no matter what happens in my life now, there will always be a part of me that's going to be happy, simply just because of that.
Oh, that's lovely. That seems like a good place to finish up. Do you have any thing to plug?
Just my Twitter. It's at HI5AME. I would have put it's Pro Wrestling Noah English, but when I started the account, I was a little too shy to put that because I thought they'd be angry. So it now just remains as that. It's HI5AME. And you'll find all of the Noah stuff there, the coverage, obviously, the translated interviews, the upcoming events, some links to YouTube, GIFs. So that's, if you want to give it a follow and get into Noah, you should, start there.
Yep.
An invaluable resource.
100%.
Thank you.
Yep,
we thank you.
Wholeheartedly
thank
recommend
you.
That. Lovely. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
And we're back with a very truncated edition of the news as we're rapidly running out of time. So take it away, Liam.
Okay, so over in Major League Wrestling, who are fresh off their comeback, the Opera Cup participants for this year have been announced. In the first round, we got Tom Lawler versus Rocky Romero, AAA's Laredo Kid versus ACH, Loki versus Davey Boy Smith Jr., and Richard Holiday versus TJP. Sounds like a great lineup to me.
What's the standout match there for you, Liam?
Ooh, I like the look of Tom Lawler, Rocky Romero, actually. I think that'll be a good one.
Laredo Kid ACH is the one that's jumping off the page to me.
Yeah, going to be insane. Really looking forward to that, actually. Looks like a really good tournament.
Another tournament news over in Impact. They are reactivating the Knockouts Tag Team titles, which have been dormant since 2013, running a tournament that started this week, running all the way to January's Hard to Kill event, where they'll crown the new champions. So we've got Tennille Dashwood and Alicia taking on Havoc and Nevaeh in the first round, Killer Kelly and Renee Michelle taking on Jordan Grace and TBA. So be interested to see who that ends up being. Kira Hogan and Tasha Steelz taking on the debuting Sea Stars. So it'd be good to see them. Friends from Shimmer.
Absolutely.
Deonna Purrazzo and Kimberly taking on Tyre and Rosemary.
Again, this is a really quality lineup, I would say.
It is. Definitely in that first round, the Deonna Purrazzo and Kimberly taking on Tyre and Rosemary, I think, is really the one to watch.
Yeah, I would agree.
If that wasn't the first round, I would have made a case for those maybe being the finalists.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering if maybe we get a Sue Young appearance that aids Tyre and Rosemary on their quest.
Yes, good shout. Also, Impact are currently streaming the Turning Point event from the weekend for free on YouTube, which we'll post the link to.
Very cool. Okay, so quick fire round. Over in New Japan, we did speculate as to who would be the newest member of the Empire, and it was revealed to be none other than Jeff Cobb. Big Jeff, big fan. In DDT, Jun Akiyama responded to being voted into the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame succinctly by saying, "Thank you very much."
Well deserved.
Indeed. And finally, in the NWA, Marty Bell is no longer under contract, is now a free agent, so it remains to be seen where she will pop up next.
A lot of options. And then over in Ring of Honor, we're going to see them back on pay-per-view soon. They're going to be running Final Battle 2020 on December 18th, which is big news.
Yeah, really excited for that.
So all systems go on ROH TV, building towards that in the coming weeks, I imagine.
Yep, and I would expect that we will be covering that on this here podcast. But for now, we're going to wrap the news there and just give you a little heads up as to what we're going to be covering next week. But you know by now, after hearing that glorious interview, we're going to be covering Noah's The Chronicle Volume 4. And additionally, we're going to be looking at the first two episodes of MLW's Restart. In the meantime, why not give us a follow on social media? We're on Twitter and Instagram at WrestlingPod. That's wrestling without the E. You can shoot us an email at WrestlingPod@gmail.com. Again, wrestling without the E. We're on ITRWrestling.com with all the news and updates that you need. And by all means, check out InsideTheRopesMagazine.com for a hard copy of all your wrestling news. That pretty much wraps us up for this week. Thank you so much for joining us on what has been another episode of the Wrestling Podcast, all the graps without the E. And all that remains is to say, stay safe, stay happy, and enjoy the graps.